This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Thank you, Joe, very much for that great big band, Broadway and More program every Friday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And now it is time for, that's right, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, March 18th, 2011. And thank you for tuning in to local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronik, and I'm just back from a little trip out of town, 7 days in beautiful, warm Austin, Texas. I've got some Texas stories for you to tell, and of course you know how big they are. They're very, very big. So, but we don't want to fill up the whole hour yet with Texas stories, and I do want to thank Dennis Reimars, our WHFR news director, for sitting in last week and hosting the show and keeping you up to date on information that matters to you most. Why? Because it's right next door. Today we have a special guest in the studio, and I'm going to turn the interview over to Dennis, who is always well prepared. Our special guest, Dennis, you go ahead and introduce her.
Thanks, Jane. Welcome back. It's good to see you. I don't know that I could fill your chair again 2 weeks in a row. We're here with Diane Green, the Associate Dean of Counseling and
Assisted Learning Services and Student Outreach and Support.
All right. Wow. And those that listen to the show regularly, we've heard you before, and a lot of times we talk about these, the non-traditional health non-traditional careers. In this case, imagine the possibilities, non-traditional health careers for men. Can we talk a little bit about this?
Sure.
All right.
This is a special learning experience, isn't it? A special seminar on campus, a live moment that people can come and get even more detail than what we can share with them today, right? And it's going to happen when?
It's going to, go ahead.
Wednesday, March 23rd.
Okay.
And we're really excited about this because I think this is our fifth year of offering the non-traditional seminars. In the fall, we do it for women, and in the winter semester, we do it for men. And we really focus on highlighting programs here at the college in our health careers area and in nursing. And it's an exciting event. We usually have a very large turnout of men who are very interested, first, in wanting to come to Henry Ford, and secondly, wanting to glean more information and insight into the programs that we offer here at the college. We're also very excited, and I need to point out that the success of the program really rests with the lead faculty for the various programs and the students in those programs who agree to come in and present to the men who are in attendance. Some of our students actually do presentations, and our keynote speaker this year is from our nursing program. So we're real excited about how it comes together. And understand, I don't do this by myself. I have three adjunct counselors who work with me: June Chopek, Debbie Glazer, and Jan Jameson, who work with me and have over the 5 years in pulling together this event. So it's big fun.
Now, when we met in, I want to say it was like November, we talked about the non-traditional careers.
Actually, it was October.
October, was
yeah,
it? Okay.
Yeah.
And that was in the fall term, and we talked about some of the jobs that were non-traditional for women were like in construction, accounting, things like that. What are some of the jobs that would be considered non-traditional in addition to nursing in the health career field?
The programs that we have here at the college that are recognized as career technical education programs, and this is all defined through the the Carl D. Perkins Occupational Education Act. And this program is a funded event using Perkins monies. For this particular event, we are highlighting our physical therapy assistant, respiratory therapy, technology, radiography tech, surgical tech, ophthalmic technician, pharmacy technology. And this year, a newcomer to our event is our medical assistant biller. And what determines whether a program is non-traditional, at least based on the guidelines, is the percentage of male students who are actually working in an area.
Compared to the entire
Absolutely.
Total.
And then once their numbers reach that magic percentage, and to be quite honest, I'm not sure what it is. But I could see you were going to ask me that.
Okay.
So there is a magic percentage that then deems that particular area no longer non-traditional for men.
No, Lindsay.
Oh, and I forgot nursing. How could I forget nursing?
Well, and then that was what I was going to say. Lindsay and I have talked about this on Campus Connection when we cover it before one of your seminars, and we still scratch our heads. We think that there's so many male nurses. How can they not have reached that magic number yet? But in fact, they haven't, have they?
Absolutely not. When you think of the number of male nurses in relation to the number of women, understand, nursing traditionally had been one of those few areas that it was okay for women to pursue. Nursing, secretarial work, education.
Sure.
There were clear, defined career paths that women were, in fact, limited to. So you're dealing with very large numbers of women who are working in the nursing area and in other health careers areas.
There are advantages to either gender working in a non-traditional field.
I mean,
as far as sometimes scholarships, sometimes things like that. Can we talk about that? Because somebody might be listening and saying, "Well, you know, I've thought about that." What can we tell them to kind of maybe push them over the top? What are some of the advantages?
Well, I think for men and what I hear men talk about, men coming into nursing and to the various health careers areas are really motivated by the idea that there's greater mobility. So, for example, I come in as a physical therapy assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a man, and I really like this.
Okay.
And I know that, wow, this is good. I took the program. I wanted to make sure that this fit for me. I want to pursue physical therapy. I want to pursue that PhD. I want to be the person in charge who's doing the diagnosing and who's outlining what programs of treatment will be appropriate for that individual. Nursing for men. They can pursue nurse practitioner. They can move to nurse anesthetist. And these are areas that really afford them mobility within the field. The ultimate mobility is I am good at what I do, and I feel confident about what I do. I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to become a doctor.
And that's and it all starts here. And I think that,
yes.
Boy, you nailed it. I mean, it really starts with these beginning programs. What you're saying is somebody could, because let's face it, a lot of us, including myself, came back to school because of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
I know people are sick of this cliche, but it's so appropriate. We were reinventing ourselves.
Right.
I'm on the radio. I wasn't on the radio 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I know, hard to believe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so somebody that comes in, they go, you know what? I have a family. I'm 40 years old. I have a family. I need to get out there and start earning income as soon as possible. Some of these programs allow that in a much shorter period of time than, say, a four-year degree or whatever, right?
Absolutely.
So you're out there working, Absolutely. And like you said, there's mobility where, well, I like this. I like this, and I'm making a decent living at it. I can go
Absolutely.
Back to school, and I can move forward. Okay.
It was really interesting. And I think this was maybe 2 years ago, maybe it was three, when the auto industry began to just bleed out employees as they tried to balance their bottom lines and not crash and burn. And I can remember that particular seminar. The nursing program was fabulous in promoting the seminar. They had an event and just kind of pushed it. We had 62 men who showed up, and it was a room that was filled with, for the most part, a lot of anxiety, a lot of fear. There was a gentleman who came to me, what can I get through in a year and be able to take care of my family? Well, you know, for most of these programs, you're looking at having to first complete the entrance, the admissions requirements. Mm-hmm. For some students, that takes 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
Then you have a wait list, and depending on the program, the wait list can vary from 2.5, 3 years to approximately 4 years or longer on our physical therapy assistant program. I'm sorry, that's radiography.
Right.
I corrected on that. So it's not always the real quick fix unless you're looking at some of those certificate programs that may not pay as well, but they do allow you to still work towards getting those requirements satisfied for the program that you are ultimately pursuing.
Plus you have your foot in the door.
Absolutely.
I mean, and if you're, say, at, I'm just throwing this out there for a name, but you're at Oakwood Hospital working, blah, 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 and you move on forward in your education, and mm-hmm. I'm told sometimes the hospitals pay for that. I mean, that's mm-hmm. not always, that's not engraved in stone, but that could happen, and you move forward. If you do well at your current job, wouldn't it make sense that you may continue there? You know what I mean?
Yes.
There's a cause yes. and effect. We're with Diane Green, and we're talking about Imagine the Possibilities, Non-Traditional Health Careers for Men. This takes place this coming Wednesday, March 23rd. It is 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Health Careers Education Center, H150, which would be that would be on what, the southwest corner of campus,
yes,
the beautiful building over there. Mm-hmm. Now, registration's at 8 a.m., so everybody knows breakfast and lunch are included in this. And
free.
Free. This whole entire thing is free.
Admission,
this is free admission.
Free.
Open to anyone, yes?
Yes.
Anyone that can hear our voice or read this, or anybody that is able to come here.
Yeah, point to make, you do not have to be a currently enrolled student here.
Thank
at
you.
The college, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so we have, like I said, free admission, breakfast and lunch. It is Wednesday, March 23rd. Registration's at 8, so we recommend. I mean, this sounds like there could be a nice turnout. There should be.
Absolutely.
Based on the
We're
significant.
Hoping.
Right,
We're
right.
absolutely hoping.
And I know
that
they do build
be.
Every year, don't they?
They do.
That's awesome.
They do.
And if they have questions, they can or register. Should we register ahead of time? Or?
Well, you know, we like to recommend that because then we have some sense of our numbers. If we're providing a continental breakfast and lunch, we want to make sure that we have a sufficient amount to accommodate the numbers that are in attendance. So we are asking that people call 313-845-9617 to register, or you can email. And it's B. Redinger. B as in boy, REDINGER at hfcc.edu. We do, of course, welcome walk-ins. We're not going to turn anyone away, but the registration helps us.
It helps you. Right? And obviously, there are going to be the people that are just learning about this, maybe even Wednesday morning. So please, you're welcome. Tell people about it.
Yes.
And definitely, this is something that, again, it's not going to happen for another year.
Right. This is, you know, these are great specialized workshops. I just wanted to ask Diane, and to my recollection, HSCC job placement officers, Chad Austin, he's under your area, too. Is he in your division?
He is not in within the,
he's
the
with
counseling,
the
but he is at student.
Registration.
He's in student
okay.
affairs. And right. Chad will be presenting. He will be coming in during the early morning time slot to talk about the placement office,
right.
the kinds of services they make available to students while they're students, and also in helping them in the employment piece. His office works very closely with health careers and nursing because they do annual work fairs in the health careers areas and nursing. Also, Dr. Brenda Hildreth, who is over our student outreach and support program, is going to talk about funding sources that are available through her area to support students who are in career and technical education.
Just to make sure our listeners know who's wearing what hats, Chad Austin, job placement officer here, he assists our HFCC students who are looking for jobs, both people who are currently enrolled, haven't finished
and
their programs,
graduates.
As well as graduates. So even if they graduated a year or two ago, they might be able to get back in touch with Chad and get a lead on
That's
something,
true.
Certainly. But under your area, of course, is one of the things you can do in counseling is career counseling. So people that aren't sure about jobs. Now, of course, this workshop is focused on non-traditional jobs for men, which might most men may not think about, mm-hmm. most males may mm-hmm. not think about as a career open to them or possible for them. If I can just ask you, because you must know the overview on these things, what's the job situation in this area? I mean, are there some basic ideas, and we can take a couple more minutes on this. I would assume anybody thinking of dropping out of high school should not, first of all.
The associate degree is now the new high school diploma.
Right.
And what is being said is that students now minimally must have that associate degree because the employers have upped the ante. They're saying, no, that's fine, you've got that high school diploma, but we want to see you have more training. So the associate degree has become the new high school diploma.
That's interesting.
And we're finding, and what's interesting and has been a challenge for so many individuals who've been bled out because of this economic chokehold that we still have on our economy here in Michigan, is that so many of the individuals, of course men included, came out of the factories without high school diplomas or GEDs. So they have to get those pieces in place before they can even start to look at us as a possibility and moving forward. We worked with a lot of individuals who were being supported through the No Worker Left Behind program. Unfortunately, those monies have dried up for new people. They're continuing to support people who were already being funded. Number two, your question on unemployment in Michigan, and I was listening to WDET this morning on my way in, and even last night they were talking about, and I think a lot of it has to do with the governor's new budget he's putting out there that's mm-hmm. getting people really eager and maybe a little anxious in terms of that piece. But they were saying that the economy, even in Michigan, is starting to turn the corner a little bit. Do we have a long way to go? Yes. I was in for a test at DMC, and the individual who was caring for me, a technician, was exploring, you know, what other possibilities are there for me? So I'm doing a little career counseling while I'm having my little test done.
All right.
But it was interesting because she started to talk about the need to get a little something else to shore her up in terms of flexibility as it mm-hmm. relates to the uncertainty of the job market. So while there is some growth, we see the auto companies are starting to begin to call folks back in small numbers. There's some other activity.
Or actually hire new employees that have different skills than the ones they laid off.
Now, that's the other thing that's interesting, that so many of those jobs that individuals were bled out from mm-hmm. will no longer be.
Right, they're just
because
gone.
The industry is looking at other technologies that will allow them to function more efficiently, which are in fact going to require more skills for individuals coming in to take them.
Right.
So you're right.
So a college education, associates, or maybe one of our vocational certificates that are about 2-year programs, pretty essential, if not a bachelor's degree. I always tell people in the telecommunication area, always think about being a DJ. All I got to do is talk. talk, or you're going to get all your skills together so that maybe what you say, if you are a DJ, is going to have some sense behind it and also be appropriate to the business's purposes. 2 weeks ago, unfortunately, on the David Letterman show, he had that Mr. Know-It-All, Donald Trump.
Sure.
And, of course, he knows everything about business since he's been bankrupt several times.
Right.
But they don't point that out.
No. That's
but,
not convenient.
But he can hire and fire on his little TV sure. show yeah, as if different. He really knew who was
but
smart and
Donald
who wasn't.
Donald keeps coming back.
He does.
Well, that's right. As long as you can keep combing his hair sideways.
Wives keep firing him, don't they?
But they actually brought up, hey, Employment in America, what do you have to say, Mr. Businessman, about that? Well, he didn't say, come to me for a job, first of all. He didn't say that. He said, well, you got to be in the right place. Like, if you're in Detroit, I'd say, get the heck out of there.
Oh, God.
That's my Donald Trump routine.
That was pretty darn good.
Thank you. And, you know, that's just crazy because there are jobs here, although the last thing I read in the last day or two is that most of the jobs that are new are actually coming from entrepreneurs, that is new business, mm-hmm. in new areas that are opening up and
we'll
usually need special skills
sure.
for that, especially a lot of those new businesses are relatively small, and so you'll be hired in needing to do a lot of different kinds of things. You know, reading and writing and maybe some information about even how to run the business, about accounting skills or certainly all kinds of computer-based information. So when they talk about looking for the new jobs, we can help them look. We can give them ideas. But they've got to be accessing information all the time and going to special workshops and expos, business expos, and finding out where the new companies are that are being created. Because a lot of the older companies, maybe they're doing a little better now themselves, but they're not hiring that many new people. Or if they are, they're hiring people with more desirable skills, and they're being quite selective. So the college education and having all the knowledge that we provide here at the college and through your counseling division, Diane, is so essential. It's so important. Stay in school, but get on the right direction. Get a lot of opportunity. Learn everything you can about science and math and social science, because you don't really know where that next job is going to be. Maybe it's a little bit off the track from what you thought you would go into.
And one thing, just jumping in there a little bit, with our Career Resource Center in the counseling office, we provide free assessments to students and non-students who are considering Henry Ford as a way of helping them to begin to look at where their interests and abilities lie in making more rational, realistic choices as they may move forward with their careers. And that service is available to individuals Monday through Thursday from 10 to 2 and Tuesday and Wednesday evenings from 5 until 6:30. And it's no cost to individuals to come in and speak with us.
Just a final point, too. Under your office, you have specific folks that it used to be called the Focus on Women's Center. What is it called now?
Student Outreach and Support.
Student Outreach and Support. And, of course, so if you have a especially challenging personal situation, other than maybe being out of work, then we have special people that can give you aid and assistance, too, to maybe help get you back in school. Besides giving the advice, I'll just, in general, aid and assistance, there's things to explore here. So it's the counseling division at Henry Ford Community College that you should check out at the website, hfcc.edu/counseling or something like that. One last time, the non-traditional seminar for men.
Careers
and so on.
And please give us a call at 313-845-9617. Or you can email Brenda Redinger at Bredinger at hfcc.edu. And we encourage you to come on in and enjoy us, enjoy the event and spend the day with us.
That's Wednesday, March 23rd, 8 a.m. Get there early, register. Diane, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Appreciate this.
Let's make this another successful seminar.
Yes, thank you.
And I think we're going to Jim Hightower.
Jim Hightower's commentaries, which relate to this whole economic situation in the U.S. right now, too. First of all, how unfortunately our country is going from democracy to plutocracy.
There you go.
So everybody knows about the planet Pluto, so that's pretty far away. Yeah, well, no, it's not defined that way. But let's go to that. And again, thank you to Diane Green, HFCC Counseling.
In American politics, the past not only sticks with us, but it often provides the best definition of what's going on in the politics of the present. So it can be useful to revisit some powerful words from our history. Today's media and political powers, for example, keep using the word conservatism to describe current political trends in our democratic republic. Poor choice of words. From the Koch brothers to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, from GOP House Speaker John Boehner to such anti-worker governors as Walker of Wisconsin, an autocratic power grab is underway to enthrone corporate power and moneyed elites to rule unilaterally over our government, economy, and environment. Nothing conservative about that. Rather, a word from America's past best describes their goal: plutocracy. It is the direct opposite of democracy, which is government by the many, by all of the people, by us. Plutocracy, on the other hand, is government by the wealthy, by them and for them. The struggle between democracy and plutocracy has defined our political history from the Revolution of 1776 forward. And now, here we go again. Wall Street banksters, corporate chieftains, speculators, and other pampered plutocrats are out to crush the hard-won laws, rules, institutions, and social compacts that we, the people, have struggled to put in place over the years to undergird our people's democratic authority. Busting unions, unleashing corporate money in politics, restricting access to courts, gutting financial and environmental regulation, all of these and more are about supplanting our democracy with their plutocracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, call them what they are, not conservatives, but self-serving plutocrats. Or nail them with another good word from the past, kleptocrats, government by thieves.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Every state legislature has its share of incompetent, insensitive, and often incomprehensible goobers sitting in seats of power. Sometimes you have to wonder who helps them work the doorknobs to get out of their houses each morning. For some reason, Texas seems to have more than its share of grade-A goobers serving in our state capitol. One is Debbie Riddle, a right-wing Republican ideologue from the town of Tomball. Representative Riddle is presently in a pout. She's offended that so many people have been offended by an immigration bill she introduced. It calls for fining and jailing people who, quote, intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly hire undocumented immigrants. Okay, that's a pretty popular position in our state, but then she stumbled and tumbled by adding a little exemption. People who hire unauthorized laborers to work in their homes will not be fined or jailed. Yes, it's a nanny loophole for the privileged class. They rail about people they callously brand as illegal aliens. Yet, they want a steady supply of these low-wage powerless workers to care for their children, clean their houses, and tend their yards. They don't want to mess with checking documents, so Debbie blithely gives them a pass, allowing them to hate illegals and have them, too. How happy! She then demonstrated her deep grasp of the immigration issue by explaining that Latinos are coming into our state illegally because we put, quote, a big old bowl of candy out for them. Yeah, Madam Lawmaker, those housekeeping and yard jobs, as well as chicken plucking and roofing jobs, are plenty cushy and well-paying, which is why so many of your neighbors are scrambling to grab such work for themselves. This is Jim Hightower saying, pious politicos should try walking in the shoes of people they denigrate before they legislate. Reality can be a useful teacher if you're willing to listen to reality.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Dennis and Jay here behind the mics. I'm Jay, and Dennis is sitting at Diane's microphone now. So let's see if he's on the air. I think you are. Talk, Dennis.
I think so.
Oh, no, that was the wrong one. What are the odds? Three different choices, and I get the wrong one.
That's all right.
To start with. I have been gone, you know, for, a week now and 2 weeks from the airwaves, and they started to forget. What the knobs do. You turn them left or right, or Do you slide that thing up or down? It's amazing how soon we forget. But we don't forget about the importance of issues in Dearborn, and probably the biggest one is Dearborn education cuts. Now, it's true that right here at Henry Ford Community College in Governor Snyder's budget, now, Governor Snyder, let's say, let's be very fair here, he is going to make a major address next month, April, about specifically education in Michigan, and talk about the cuts and the need for improvements or changes in one place or the other. And so to be fair to him, I should advise you at the outset is to listen to that particular speech very closely, and then, of course, advise the legislature and your local elected representative exactly how you feel about it and how you think those plans should be voted on. Some of the things he's already identified in his, not just his state of the state address, but also the state budget proposals he made a week later. They always make the specifics of their grand speech a week later in January. Are very troubling because they're major cuts to higher education and K-12 education in Michigan. Now, not to Henry Ford Community College. Remember, community colleges, we don't really get state money or federal money. Not very much. It's such a small part of our budget. Let me tell you, 80% of the money for Henry Ford Community College and the other public community colleges comes from the tuition that students pay. So user fees, if you want to call it that. Sure. I mean, the people that want to get education, they're paying for the education, 80%. 17% more comes from the taxpayers within the city of Dearborn by a small millage request that's passed usually once every 10 years. And, of course, that gives them the tremendous advantage of much lower tuition for themselves and their families who live in Dearborn. It's at least 40%, 50% less than what people would pay who are not residents here.
It's about 50% less.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that leaves 3%.
Right, and that 3% comes from various state grants and federal grants.
Very small.
We get a lot of money to help. Most of the students that work on campus for money get paid what's called work study. So 80% of their salary, their minimum wage salary, working in the library or other areas of the school, are actually coming from the federal government. So I think most of the money from the federal government is Pell Grant money and the work study money for people on campus. Pell Grants goes towards programs in the technical areas, helping students to stay in those programs. So, yeah, a very, very little bit of state money is coming here. But, in fact, we're the best bang for the buck in terms of the state. If the state decreased our support significantly, that little 3% or so that Dennis is indicating here that includes state and federal, it would still hurt our programs, and we would have to stop doing the job to get people into the new certificate areas and the new non-traditional areas. Community colleges are more focused upon specific jobs and getting people ready for specific jobs than a four-year school can or even should. So they're getting hit with a fantastic cut of almost 15%. That's like University of Michigan Dearborn and the other big four-year schools, Wayne and so on. And if they try to make up the difference by raising their tuition, which, of course, would only keep more great students out of higher ed, the state is promising to cut them even more.
Right. They can raise it, I think, up to 7%. And anything beyond that, they're penalized.
Right. Yep.
Whereas you said if they took some of the money away from the state or federal funding for our school, for HFCC, even if we had to raise tuition, it's at such a small amount, and it's already so low.
Yeah,
it's,
because our tuition is so low compared to a four-year school.
All right.
I'm sure we would take that option, but why stop a good thing? So I have to make that caveat at the outset. Well, you're not shared sacrifice. We're doing, talk about bang for the buck. I mean, state money going to community college education is really going far, and that little bit of extra support is really it's well used in terms of state money. Also, of course, the people of Dearborn who are paying that millage, well, just let them, we don't want to pay that millage anymore, folks. We go through this every 10 years. We're talking about property values. We're talking about access to education and retraining for people any age. You know, we'll let anybody take classes here, okay?
That's true.
And any sort of retraining program you're thinking about, if you live in Dearborn, oh boy, you get, as Dennis said, tuition is already a lot lower than four-year schools, but it's only about half as much for residents of Dearborn. So it's a great deal for, I think it works out for average home, about an extra $100 a year everybody, householders in Dearborn are paying to help support Henry Ford Community College, and we thank you very much, of course.
Very much, thank you.
Yeah, but this extremely intelligent gentleman, Andrew Angel, did an analysis of the cuts to schools here in Dearborn, and he has published a letter, which he also sent to Governor Snyder, about this, and it's his analysis as a parent of children in the Dearborn Public Schools. I highly recommend it to you. I don't know if I can read every word because it fills half a page here on page 6A. Last Sunday, March 13th, I don't know if they put letters to the editor online. Do you go there frequently?
Dennis, do you see them?
I don't think they're there.
I have before. I have actually.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. The editorials, at least. I don't know about the letters to the editor.
That's what I haven't seen. So I'm going to share this with you now.
There's four main points that I think we can talk about.
Yeah. He says, first of all, he begins by saying, thank you, Governor Snyder, for taking on Michigan's structural budget problems in an open and honest way. I was and remain convinced you are committed to a better future for our great state. Yeah, well, of course, every politician wants you to believe that. But he says, as a private sector taxpayer and a parent of two children enrolled in public elementary school, I have a personal interest in making sure our government delivers high-quality services and making sure it uses our scarce tax dollars wisely. As a nerd who looks at the numbers when I make important decisions, he must be a computer guy, as I hope everybody can be in the future, because that's how information flows these days, folks. Mr. Angel says, I have four reasons why I think you made a mistake when you proposed removing the special exemption that enables the Dearborn Public Schools DPS to receive at-risk student funding.
Interesting.
So this is his reasons. First of all, number one, Dearborn has an excellent graduation rate, particularly for at-risk students. Now, these are the people that economically, socially have a real problem staying at school or learning much.
I was going to say some of them, isn't it maybe a disability also?
Could it be a disability, but it also comes from, they also come from a lower economic class, as they call it, which means the family has less money. Maybe it's a single parent for these people as students. They don't have access to food as much as other people, and other learning situations, like maybe a computer.
Maybe they don't have a computer.
Right.
A vehicle to even get to school.
Right.
There's a lot of
exactly. Sure. There's a lot of reasons why you could be called at risk. Should have asked Diane Greene, the official definition. But he points out that Dearborn has an on-time graduation rate 5% higher and a dropout rate 2.6% lower than the statewide average. So we're already doing a pretty good job getting people graduated, despite having a significantly higher proportion of economically disadvantaged students. That's EDS, economically disadvantaged. The table above shows that a poor student, and he's got tables here, graphs, charts.
No,
he's got tables anyway. You could do a graph later if you want to make a chart out of it. But he says, shows that a poor student educated in the DPS, the Dearborn Public Schools, has a better chance of graduating and a lower dropout rate than the average Michigan student. In fact, if the rest of the districts in the state were as effective, each year we would graduate 6,550 more poor students on time and face 3,000 fewer dropouts. Instead of taking us out of the at-risk funding pool, you should be sending people here to see how we do things. Unfortunately, I think you could reuse those numbers backwards. Well, we're doing such a great job, we don't need as much money.
And that's what the state did.
Yeah.
No, I mean, and that's...
Yeah, unfortunately. But, you know, we're doing something right. You shouldn't hurt us to make us do something
poorly. No, use it as a model.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
if there is the details on what makes it so efficient, I think there's an awful lot of factors, not just an easy one or two that other districts can duplicate.
Right, but I mean, I know you're going to continue with his points.
Points
at the same
two, three,
time,
and four,
at
yeah.
least this may create awareness, and I think that's his mission.
Reason two, Mr. Andrew Angel, resident of Dearborn, says, parents have voted with their feet and the DPS is growing. Resources need to follow. According to the Census Bureau small area income and poverty estimates, 40% of all Michigan children in poverty live in Dearborn and 9 other school districts. Okay, so it's not just Dearborn, but Dearborn and 9 others. The school-age population of those 10 cities dropped by about 12% between 2000 and 2009. But while the other districts lost 41% of their students, DPS increased its enrollment 11%. Of these districts, only Dearborn and Kalamazoo increased both enrollment and the percent of their city's children that the public school district serves.
Can I say something here? Okay, these numbers are really, I mean, it's, okay. some say Dearborn home prices were inflated for a while, and everything kind of came back with the economy coming down the way it did. Everything kind of water found its level, in other words. So Dearborn, which is considered a great community, a family-oriented community, great education, it also all of a sudden became more affordable. There were rental properties that were available. There were a lot. So people that maybe couldn't afford Dearborn before, let's face it, landlords with open houses might settle for less money. People come in, and that may create that 40%, what did he say, the economically disabled? No. What
did he call? 40% of all Michigan children in poverty live in Dearborn and nine and other districts. Right. Now, probably that one of the other big districts is Detroit.
But that's what I was going to say. Yeah, they may not be as well off as Joe. So if you look at Dearborn, it became affordable for people that otherwise maybe not be able to. Therefore, they're in good schools, and therefore those numbers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was going to say about Kalamazoo, I remember that up to a couple of years ago, a super rich person, and God bless him, set up a scholarship funding guaranteeing college tuition, maybe just for the first year, maybe all 4 years, to any child who graduated from high school with a high school degree in Kalamazoo.
I totally remember this.
Yeah, it was on CBS News and so
was
on.
Was it an athlete?
Or no,
what,
no.
Who was it? Tell me.
Oh, you mean the famous person?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think a businessman. He wanted to keep somewhat anonymous. I don't think
Wasn't like a DeVos or somebody like
that. No. And so that's a reason to move to Kalamazoo. I don't say you should leave Dearborn, folks, but if that's still in place, imagine a college scholarship, even if it's only 1 year. And I think it had to be at a public institution in Michigan.
Right.
Okay, but that could have been U of M or what. Now, you'd have to qualify. You'd have to have some academic quality. I don't think it's just the degree alone, maybe the San Jose Community College. But anyway, if that's in place, what a wonderful thing. And yes, at a fiction book that Ralph Nader wrote a couple of years ago, only the super rich can save us. It's fiction, folks. But, you know, if you're super rich, you need to do something to help get our kids educated here and follow that Kalamazoo model.
Maybe you don't need to. You should want
to. A couple people working together on this. That would pay back people so much. Anyway, so Dearborn's going to be doing a good job. Reason three from Mr. Angel, Dearborn schools are good stewards of public money. The three metrics you use to measure public school basic operations all show that Dearborn does an outstanding job converting public dollars to value-added instruction. One of them is percent of schools meeting adequate yearly progress. Another is percent of school operating expenditures spent on instruction and instructional support. And ours has only gone up from 74% to 76%. Percent of teachers teaching core subject classes who are highly qualified. And that's been 98% for the last two reports in Dearborn. Imagine we don't have teachers that are forced to teach subjects that they were never trained in.
And that is so common.
Yeah, well, of course, because if you keep laying off people, the people at the lower levels.
Opening, sure.
First of all, you're laying off the people who are new. They're the ones that have the latest education on science and math, first of all. Right. And so, unfortunately, now I'm not saying the senior teachers of science and math in various districts are not trying to keep up. But, the people just coming out of college, they have the latest info, and they've been taught by the latest techniques, especially about science and math, which is changing maybe a little bit faster than literature.
Right. yeah. Dickens is still Dickens.
Yeah. What the Dickens. Now, reason number four, Mr. Angel says, Dearborn invests in college-bound students. Dearborn believes in college education for our children, and we don't wait until graduation to start. DPS and Henry Ford Community College have a strong dual enrollment program that awarded credit for almost 2,400 college classes last year. So the people in high school in Dearborn, if they qualify through their counselors and with permission of their principals and so on, 2,400, this is not college credit hours, 2,400 college classes were taken last year here at HFCC by through the dual enrollment program with the Dearborn Public Schools. So they get a head start on what college is really all about and advanced placement credits, too, when they go to either here or somewhere else. Those credits will all easily transfer in almost every class here. So we make students college ready by giving them college experience, and that should be another reason not to cut out the at-risk money for the students that would have trouble even getting to the public schools.
And so people know the dual enrollment isn't just for Dearborn Public Schools. I've shared classes with Allen Park High School students, yes, and so on. It's a great program. If you haven't looked into it for your high school age kids, please do, because it'll save you money in the end. It'll help them. It's an easier transition.
It's not free tuition. You still have to pay. But, sure. Of course, Dearborn residents for their Dearborn children in Dearborn Public Schools would have to pay a lot less than Allen Park or Taylor or whatever.
And that's class they'll have to take later when they get to college.
So Mr. Andrew Angel of Dearborn, letter to the editor, press and guide, last Sunday, March 13th. He concludes by saying, I look forward to your April address on education by Governor Snyder. He said, I'm very interested in your vision for how school districts should address the $470 per student basic foundation cut that we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He says, I hope to hear more about Treasurer Andy Dillon's proposals that he had before he was treasurer about reducing the total cost of public employee health insurance, the largest single increasing cost for all the districts, as well as the pension issues.
Isn't that part of his campaign when he wanted to be governor?
Right.
Oh, okay.
When he wanted to be governor. Well, he had already proposed the bill as the House Majority
That's
Leader.
That's right. Okay.
And it just didn't get passed and get a chance to be voted on. So we'll see, since Governor Snyder appointed Andy Secretary of Treasurer, he's the money guy now, that maybe he'll be able to get that plan reinstated to help the district save some money there by a statewide plan. Of course, it means cuts in benefit coverage for not just school teachers, but that plan also means other state employees, as well as police and fire in the city of Dearborn and throughout the state. A lot of those people don't want those cuts, of course, get less coverage, but it will save the state and the local school districts and the local cities money there. He also says eliminating Dearborn's 31A exemption will not save the state any dollars. It'll just shift money from Dearborn to other districts. That was the grandfather clause,
That's right.
that we were raising more money by our millage, which we're not getting any benefit from now,
right?
From the state. He says it'll just shift money from Dearborn to other districts, eliminating also our bilingual education funding. He's cutting out, I think, all bilingual
right.
throughout the state. We'll dismantle the state's single most successful integration program. In a way, it helps at-risk students who are at risk because they don't know English as a first language.
Absolutely.
It's not their fault. They're here. They want to get an education, and this helps making it possible for them. And so he thinks the governor should look towards Dearborn and the other districts doing a great job and reward us, not penalizes, that's the summary here. But very well done, Mr. Angel, very well thought through, and obviously you know how to look up some numbers and to make logical reasons. We invite everyone in Dearborn to think about these issues. You know, the opinions expressed in this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. I don't know why not, though, but just Dennis, myself, and Mr. Angel's in this case, Andrew Angel of Dearborn. That guy's a lot of smarts. I wonder if he's thinking about running for the Board of Ed.
Well, that's a heck of a first
foray into these topics.
Foray.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So
get your picture in the paper, too, huh?
Other topics here that Dennis wanted to cover, maybe?
I'm sure. This one's close to my heart because I'm such a book person. Well, as you are.
Mm-hmm.
We have the annual library book sale starts Thursday.
And who's the organization
Thursday,
that does it?
Thursday was yesterday.
Yes, but it's okay. It still goes through the weekend.
You know what? I'm going to make sure I get this right because we always...
AAUW.
Yeah, but Lindsay and I fight about this.
American Association of University Women.
Thank you. AAUW. This is an annual thing. The Friends of the Dearborn Heights City Libraries book sale will be 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. That was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
10 to 4, so it's still 4 o'clock today, and then tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
And where?
And this will be, thanks for asking...
The center, or
no.
Sometimes they do it at the ice rink.
No, this one actually is Dearborn Heights, I believe.
Okay.
Because it's the Friends of the Dearborn Heights City Libraries.
Sure, that's fine. Okay.
And, of course, it doesn't say. At the main library.
The main library in Dearborn Heights.
I just totally made that up.
Wherever that is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks.
There's probably only one of them.
Isn't that interesting? Oh, it's at the John F. Kennedy Jr.
Yes.
Library.
John F. Kennedy Jr. Library. That's it.
And it says the number for the Caroline Kennedy Library, and they have two numbers here, so it could be both of them. No, the article honestly does not say where it will be.
What kind of journalists are out there?
I'm sorry. It's beginning Thursday at Caroline Kennedy's Library.
No, Caroline Kennedy.
This is Ben Baird. This is someone I hadn't read earlier, but nice job. It was my fault, Mr. Baird. I didn't see it right in the first sentence. Caroline Kennedy Library. It is still going on until 4 today, and then from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. tomorrow. Thank you.
What a great deal. You can get some great books, recent books contributed by college professors, maybe like myself or others.
Yeah.
Not just textbooks, but great books, fiction, nonfiction, fairly recent, 50 cents, a dollar. It's a great deal, and there's nothing better than a good book. And relatively current titles, too, not just old stuff off the shelves. So there are some older things.
She said many of them will be recent from the last 10 years, and there will be lots of nonfiction and some text. Just so people know, it's $3. This is tomorrow.
Yes, this is tomorrow, Saturday.
This is when you bring, it's $3 to fill a plastic bag and $5 to fill a shopping bag, and there's no limit to the purchase of multiple bags. There you go.
Wow.
$3 to fill a bag.
That's their sort of wrap-up campaign. They don't want to have to pack those books up and take them back. It's sort of like Dearborn Homecoming.
Thank you. I was thinking that.
for WHFR and our used CD sales.
So. Yeah, no, take them, take them.
Yeah.
What do you got
there? Also in the papers this week, I noticed, and it's very good for the state of Dearborn, the Times Herald has indicated that they've just been approved for money from the state of Michigan. That's right. The state of Michigan is giving out money, who would have guessed, for specifically up to $300,000 for boating and fishing improvements at Camp Dearborn. That's right. Our Camp Dearborn, that we are making a little bit of money on the last couple of years. The usage of that facility, which is out in Milford, Michigan,
right,
not nearby, has broken even and made a small profit. And Mayor O'Reilly, in his State of the City address, as well as his economic statement before that, has indicated they can't sell the place. Say, oh, we could sell it, and a bunch of people put up condos or shopping centers and make a fortune on that property in Milford. Well, of course, all property values are down, even in Milford,
Sure. Although
recreational properties or in that area are holding. We can't get it rezoned, okay? The city of Milford, which controls the zoning in terms of what kind of business or what kind of use, residential, commercial, whatever, they don't want to change the zoning. I don't know. I guess the business owners in Milford don't want more business or more condos to compete with what they already have. I can't explain it, but they will not allow the city of Dearborn to apply and get a change in use permit. And so, therefore, we can't sell it because the number one people that would buy it for a lot of money would be people that would want to make it into condos or businesses. Okay, so if we can't sell it, even for a good amount, we can't get it rezoned, then we're going to have to keep it and make money on it. So one of the things they did was to apply for this grant. And here's the complete story, because it's not as simple as it might hear, as you might think. Also, since we just did the story about the need for money in Dearborn Public Schools, we might say, well, could we just take that money and give it to the schools in Dearborn? Do we really need fishing and boating improvements?
It's a whole other grant.
At Camping Dearborn? Yeah, okay. So the Recreation Commission members on Tuesday here in Dearborn approved the application for Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund grant following a public hearing at the Center for Community and Performing Arts Center. The purpose of the grant is established in 1976 and administered by the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, DNR, is to assist local governments in purchasing land or parks in order to preserve them or to develop land for recreation. And Dearborn's grant would be used to construct a path connecting Milford Trail on General Motors Road to the camp. It would cover costs for a launching area for canoes and kayaks, as well as a platform for fishing on the Huron River shoreline. Recreation Director Gregory Orner, here in Dearborn, said the anticipated cost of the entire project is $281,000.
That's kind of close.
About half of that would be used to construct a bridge that will allow for crossing the river. The application also must be approved by the city council along with, city council's got to put up $114,000 in matching city funds before being submitted to Lansing. So the city has to, which is not doing well for a budget, has to put in $114,000 in order to get $281,000 back. And the deadline for submission is April 1st. And then MDNR officials will make a decision by December. But it looks like they have the money in the state for this. And I guess they assume that we we qualify. I think the big factor here is can any city in the state come up with any matching money at all?
114 is a lot.
Well, whatever the other projects are in the other cities, they don't have a big operation like Camp Dearborn.
So what do you think? Is the theory more because it's so expensive to travel, people are staying home or are using Camp Dearborn more frequently? Is that why we're looking at this? I mean, in other words...
Well, if we can make more money and get more use... That's good for the city long term.
But and I think they're looking at that and they're saying, the numbers have gone up. This is a good opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people aren't going to wherever, to Austin, right. You know?
Yes.
I can't see you going to Camp Dearborn instead of Austin each year. But I mean, other people, right?
Yes, yes. And it doesn't mean that people are necessarily going to be able to drive from this area, but more and more people are living in the area around Milford. It is a growing area.
Huge.
And so they'll be making use of it. Orner has said, we think if we can connect to that trail system that will be kind of a hub for our campers that can bring their bicycles, and have easy access as opposed to trying to access the trail through General Motors Road, that it'll be more of an incentive for people to use that facility. Deputy Director of Recreation Eric Peterson said that the MDNR looks for specific criteria when determining the recipients of the funds. Are looking for river access, increased tourism, fishing opportunities, kayaking, and what have you.
So all of the things that they're improving, obviously, they looked at the criteria first.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Well, yeah. But the city of Dearborn still has to decide. Our council people and maybe the mayor, I assume his recommendation, since he has let the rec department move this far along, that
right.
The mayor probably be in support of this, which means he'll recommend to the council that they approve this, the $114,000 of matching funds, which is required before they put the application in.
Yeah. Without a guarantee that they'll be approved, which is, you don't have to pay it unless it's approved.
There
anyway.
Is some question, again, but they're seeking the grant. Maybe the whole state will back off on grants for those sorts of things.
What's the time frame on when they decide?
They won't decide until December.
You know what? Then let's ask the mayor when he's on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's going to happen on?
April 15th.
No, April 25th.
April 25th. What did I say?
No, it isn't. No, you've got the schedule here. I've been out of town. I'll open up my day planner. This is so embarrassing. But during our pledge drive, folks, once a year we ask you to give us a pledge.
Wonderful.
And April 15th is the date that Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. will be here for all of the journal, the whole journal show.
You know how I knew it was April 15th? Because it's tax day, and
that's
I always
right.
wait.
Yes, and I haven't done mine yet. I'm scared. although I'm ready to put in my $8,000+ discount on my diesel purchase. So
you
my
know
diesel
what?
Car. So
no matter how bad it gets, just think of how bad the state what they have to go through to get theirs.
Yeah.
So.
Well, actually, I mean, I have an income, and I've always said, and everybody hates me for it. In my same economic level, I'm willing to pay more taxes. Which brings us to the final point, though. And it's
nice
only
segue.
3 minutes to go, and we're waiting for the imminent arrival of Joanne Korczynska, and Highway 61 will start as soon as she gets in here. To conclude this show, there is an editorial written not by the Dearborn Times Herald, but by the Jackson City Citizen Patriot, and they're saying, you should give good, look at that pension tax proposed by Governor Snyder on public pensions, which would be anybody in government of Michigan who retires, teachers, all teachers in Michigan have that same pension tax to pay, and
that would be a double tax, we agreed, right?
Right. Well, yeah, because, you don't give the state money at the outset without tax being paid, but 4.25%, I believe, and they say on a stream of income of up to $45,120, it would mean that you'd have to pay, they had it in here somewhere, an extra, 4% of that, so over $1,000 more. Now, it's interesting that in this article, and rather conservative, the Jackson Citizen Patriot kind of supporting Governor Snyder's basic idea and all of his proposals, shared sacrifice, except I don't see the rich people sharing the sacrifice commensurate with their level of income. But other than that, shared sacrifice, kind of an interesting concept, and that's fine. But let's not hurt the poor people with basic services, folks, like education. That's my humble opinion. Anyway, in this article, they quote Michael Lefebvre of the Michigan Center, the Mackinac Center, okay, as they call it. Well, it's a conservative think tank, and of course, he disagrees with that part of Governor Snyder's proposal. Theoretically, you're against all taxes. So this is another tax, okay, and he says, in effect, the move charges the retiree, here's the sum, with a $40,000 annual pension, $1,700 a year for choosing to remain in Michigan rather than move to sunny, income tax-free Florida.
Okay.
And that's a tough call for a lot of our retired seniors, but maybe it's a time, I'm sure they'll be thinking of this, to move. If they have to pay an additional $2,000 a year on their already meager pension, maybe they should be in a state like Texas, Austin, Texas, no income tax on public pensions there. New Hampshire, no income taxes at all, no taxes on public pensions, New Hampshire. New Hampshire, though, is one of the highest states that charge the most for property tax. That's how they get their money.
All right. Wasn't Connecticut? No.
But if you rent in New Hampshire, you're pretty well off.
You're golden, right?
Oh, there's many states that charge no income tax on pensions wherever you earn them from.
Sure.
Okay. Other states do. And in fact, even the other thing, I was thinking of letting my daughter have my house in Dearborn and maybe buying another house in Dearborn, up north, Traverse City, whatever. Right. For a change of scene, Michigan is a state that charges an extra 20% on property taxes on your second home. This is a real estate agent that told me this. Really? I haven't checked other sources. So if you want to buy a second house in Michigan, you're going to get hit by an additional 20% on top of the property taxes for that second house.
This is a long pattern of,
my God,
making it difficult to live here.
Yeah, if they want you to you stay know? In Michigan, this is both of these things are not really good. And it's interesting here that here's